Creekside with Don and Jan. Welcome to Creekside with Don and Jan. If you care to live in harmony with nature and the land, and you wish to live more peacefully with all your fellow man, if self-reliant living is a big part of your plan, if you like to talk some politics with those who really can, this is the time, this is the place, Creekside with Don and Jan. Sit right down and make some space, Creekside with Don and Jan. Let's get started right away, Creekside with Don and Jan. No more singing, no delay, Creekside with Don and Jan. Creekside with Don and Jan.
Well, howdy and welcome to another episode of Creekside with Don and Jan. Hi, I'm Don Stover.
And I'm Jan Stover, and this is episode 276 on Mother's Day, May 13th, 2018.
Well, it's been a cool day, and it's been a hot day, too.
Yes, hot weather speaking, cool in that I had a chance to talk to both of our sons for over an hour each. I love that. We talked people and politics.
And Gabe never talks for an hour on the phone.
No, so that's my Mother's Day present. I get that a couple times a year, birthdays and Mother's Days, and we just had so much to say, and then Zach called at the same time Gabe was calling, so you talked to Zach, and then Zach called back, and so we each got to talk to both of our sons, and I had lengthy conversations. I talked to them about future plans for the Owl Creek Gazette. I talked about Creekside with Don and Jan. Like I said, we did politics and people and things we were passionate about, and I just love that. I love our kids.
And absolutely, he's got a place in his heart for his mommy. There's no doubt.
He's both.
He both.
And I appreciate that. Had a lot of good memories with the kids, of course. We homeschooled some, took trips with my folks, trips with you. Just life was full of family and memories and wonderful times that we still all hold dear.
Indeed. And I overheard you talking to him, too, about how wonderful it was to see them, talking to Gabe, see them in Indianapolis when we were
right
there just a few weeks ago. And it was kind of a nice treat.
It was. It was a nice surprise. And hopefully Zach will get back at the end of June. So, you know, if I can see you and I can see the kids more often than one year, we went a whole year, saw them one time, and it was like there's nothing right about that.
Absolutely nothing right about
that. So we're good to go. We've had enough touching base with the kids that it'll hold me for a while.
Yeah, and they in their little ways are interminably full of it, and we love it.
There's no doubt they have opinions. We raise them to be opinionated. It comes through them genetically, nurture and nature.
You bet.
And we're proud of that.
So anyhow.
Now, they don't always agree with us. More and more they do. But I remember one time we were all butting heads with, I think, some political decisions or something like
say
that.
Say it ain't so.
You know, once in a while. And the nice part was they reminded me that since I raised them to be free thinkers, that I couldn't expect them to agree with me every time, and dang, they had me. Oh, well, what you going to do? But we're proud of them either way.
No doubt about that. Well, we've got a lot of stuff on our plate today, and all of it revolving around Mother's Day.
Imagine say it ain't so.
One of the things we wanted to do first was to sort of give you a background, a history of Mother's Day, mm-hmm. something that most people just don't have a clue about. You and I, yesterday, sitting there looking at a little TV, the question came up, when was the first Mother's Day? And we both kind of went, and who founded it? And we both said, Abraham Lincoln.
Well, I think they said what presidents were involved or something like that. And so I don't know where we came up with that. That's just stupid.
Yeah. But at any rate, we got the skinny on that right away. So in 1907, Anna Jarvis of Philadelphia began the campaign to have Mother's Day officially recognized. And in 1914, President Woodrow Wilson did this, authorizing, proclaiming a national holiday and a, quote, public expression of love and reverence for all mothers. But way before that.
And I'm going to say, when you give the date on this second part, mm-hmm. that's why we thought Abraham Lincoln, because mm-hmm. this was the next part you're going to talk about has to do with that Civil War era.
It was in the
okay,
Civil War era.
I don't feel so silly then.
Okay. Well, in 1870, which was kind of after Lincoln mm-hmm. for some reason, Julia Ward Howe, an abolitionist, worked to establish a Mother's Peace Day.
Mm-hmm.
She dedicated the celebration to the eradication of war and organized festivities in Boston for years.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mrs. Howe wrote in this commemorative speech that she's about to give here.
She had like a proclamation.
Yeah, she wrote
a
proclamation mm-hmm. that explained it all. And she did this in 1870. She had explained it in her own impassioned words and the goals of the original holiday. And here it is. Quote, "Arise, all women who have hearts, whether your baptism be that of water or of tears. Say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking with carnage for caresses and applause." Wow.
Mm-hmm.
"Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country, we will too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs."
Let's read that again.
"Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will too. We women of one country will be too tender of those of other countries to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs." So, wow. "From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe our dishonor or violence indicate possession. As men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them then solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each learning after his own time the sacred impress of not Caesar, but of God. In the name of womanhood and of humanity, I earnestly ask that a great Congress of women without limit of nationality may be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient and at the earnest period consistent with its objects to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, and the great and general interests of peace."
That whole thing is so powerful. And I remember a friend of ours once at a libertarian convention said to me, "Where are the women in the wars that are going on right now? Where are the mothers that step up and say, no more? If the women came out in huge voice, in one voice, and said, this is not going to happen anymore.
You will not take our sons and daughters."
Right. Now, part of that, I think, is that there isn't a draft. So it is a volunteer military.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little different than because by the time the child is 18 and is free to make their own decisions, then they can sign up and enlist. But I think if mothers just everywhere said, we come together in one voice, and you notice she was not just saying an American voice. She was saying,
all mothers everywhere.
Right. I will not have my child kill your child, and you will not have your child kill my child. It's so powerful.
Yeah, well.
So that was kind of the precursor to Mother's Day, and we need to remember that it's more than just honoring mothers. It's honoring the power of motherhood
oh.
and the responsibility of it.
And as we will find out, you know, the power lies with mothers everywhere.
Yes, we'll talk about that in a minute. But first.
But first, there's more.
Well, and we talk about the importance of peace in the Mother's Day movement. We had Cindy Sheehan, who was known as and is known as the Peace Mom. Her son was killed in the war. Casey, I cannot remember what year. And she became such an advocate because she felt that even though he enlisted, he didn't know all the ramifications of enlistment.
For sure.
And so...
So she camped out in front of George Bush's house.
She did, and just said, you need to tell me, you need to explain to me what happened. And she became well-known and well-supported by, gosh, all kinds of people, mostly from the liberal left, but not entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And so as she went and marched and walked and talked and, you know, spoke all over the country, she kept saying, we've got to end these wars. And we've got to, mothers have to stand up, people have to stand up and say, no, no more.
Sing yourself a simple song of freedom.
Mm-hmm. So she was touring the nation. She was going from California to Washington, D.C. in the Tour de Peace on bikes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I noticed that she was getting near Greenville, and I said, Cindy, I typed to her. She didn't know me from Adam, but I said, we've got a magazine, we've got a podcast, we've had peace vigils for, you know, 2 years now. Could you take a detour on your Tour de Peace and come and see us? And she did. But prior to her coming, she sent some information that she had written on matriotism.
Matriotism.
Yes.
Right.
And we ran it in the magazine and we wanted to read it on the podcast. We did after she was here in 2013. We read that again in 2015 and we recorded it on the podcast. And we just want to play that again for you.
Okay. We'll play that now.
Matriotism, an excerpt from an article by Cindy Sheehan. Much as I wish I could take credit for the word matriotism, another woman wrote to me and gave me the concept. I was so intrigued by the word that I have been meditating on the possible ideology behind it and a new paradigm for true and lasting peace in the world. Before I dive into the concept of matriotism, let's explore the word patriotism. Dictionary.com defines it as love of country and willingness to sacrifice for it. There have been volumes written about patriotism, defining it, supporting it, challenging the notion of it, etc. I believe the notion of patriotism has been expediently and nefariously exploited and used to lead our nation into scores of disastrous and needless wars. All through school, we are brainwashed into believing that somehow our leaders are always right and certainly have our best interests at heart when they wave the flag and convince us to hate fellow human beings who stand in the way of making immense profits from war. As Samuel Johnson said, patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. Matriotism is the opposite of patriotism, not to destroy it, but to be a yin to its yang, and balance out the militarism of patriotism. Not everyone is a mother, but there is one universal truth that no one can dispute, no matter how hard they try. Everyone has a mother. Mothers give life, and if the child is lucky, mothers nurture life. And if a man has had a nurturing mother, he will already have a base of matriotism. A matriot loves his or her country, but does not buy into the exploitive phrase of my country right or wrong. As Chesterton said, that's like saying my mother drunk or sober. A matriot knows that her country can do a lot of things right, especially when the government is not involved. For example, I know of no other citizens of any country who are more personally generous than those of America. However, a matriot also knows that when her country is wrong, it can be responsible for murdering thousands upon thousands of innocent and unsuspecting humans. A true matriot would never drop an atomic bomb or bombs filled with phosphorus, carpet bomb cities or villages, or control drones from thousands of miles away to kill innocent men, women, and children. There is one most important thing that matriots would never do, however, and this is the key to stopping killing to solve problems. A matriot would never send her child or another mother's child to fight nonsense wars, and she would march into a war that she considered just to protect her child from harm. Aha! Matriots would fight their own battles but take a dim view of having to do so and would seldom resort to violence to solve conflict. I know one thing from the bottom of my heart. My son Casey, who was an Eagle Scout and a true American patriot, was not served well by his idea of patriotism. I will never forgive myself for not trying to counteract more the false patriotism he was raised on with the true sense of matriotism. War will end forever when we matriots stand up and say, no, I am not giving my child to the fake patriotism of the war machine who chews up my flesh and blood to spit out obscene profits. Matriotism, above all, is a commitment to the truth and to celebrating the dignity of life. That was another powerful statement. And
no doubt.
We have had the good fortune to know many powerful mothers. And by power, I mean passionate, impassioned, willing to speak their minds. I love that.
Yeah, mother is not what do they call that, a prefix in this case?
Mother is the full-on verb end noun. So speaking of another strong-willed, determined mother, you and I both had the good fortune to meet Michael Badnarik several times, and he was the 2004 Libertarian presidential candidate. His mother was such an advocate of liberty and freedom and personal responsibility and self-reliance and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and love of country and all of these things. And so I started a Mothers for Liberty Yahoo group back in the day when people used Yahoo to
start groups.
Start groups. And to connect with people all over the world. In fact, that's how I met Lori Loringer in my Mothers for Liberty group. Yeah. Krista Walker, met her in my Mothers for Liberty group. So from there, we kind of grew that, and after we met Michael Badnarik, we told him about this. He joined the group because even though it was Mothers for Liberty, it was anyone who was active in the liberty movement.
Sure.
He told his mom. She joined the group. So I'm sitting there, you know, I was like, I'm this relatively young mom compared to Elaine Badnarik, who has raised a gentleman who is running now for president of the United States.
No kidding.
And in 2005, she sent me a note as we got to know each other a little bit, and she passed away April 29th, 2015. And so in our May 2015 issue of the Owl Creek Gazette, we wrote a tribute to her and honored her the best way we knew how. Part of it was expressing how we felt about her and the job she had done in raising Michael. But we also wanted to share the words that she had written.
She
to
had
me.
A handle on that. So yeah, go ahead
did.
And read that.
Hi, Jan. My son, Michael Badnarik, is excited about your project getting mothers involved with teaching children how to be libertarians. Our schools no longer believe it is important to teach children about how our government works. In fact, it is easier to manipulate them if they don't know much about their country and their rights. Don't ever underestimate the power of a mother once she makes up her mind. When I gave a speech in Atlanta seconding Michael Badnarik's nomination as the Libertarian presidential candidate, I said that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the nation. Then I held up my two hands and I said with much emphasis, and these are the hands that rock the Badnarik cradle. I truly believe that. There was no other woman on earth that I felt was qualified to raise my children, and I still feel that way. After all these years, I am certain I did the right thing. Maybe I was not perfect. But when I see how children are being raised today, maybe Romulus and Remus didn't fare that badly after all. It is the parents' duty, and by the way, she has duty capitalized, duty to teach their children how to survive and behave in society. Motherhood hit me with a bang. If everything or anyone threatened one of my offspring, I think I could literally tear them apart or it apart with my bare hands. I definitely have that mother bear syndrome. Michael remembers the one summer when he and his brothers were in grade school and a young man appeared in our backyard. Glancing out the window to check on my sons, I spotted this man grabbing my middle son by the arm and trying to drag him away. Michael remembers me bolting through the back door. I'm not even certain I remember opening it first. And I was at the man's side in an instant. Seeing the look on my face, he dropped my son's arm and fled. I still remember the adrenaline rush I experienced that day. Discipline does not mean flogging. It means teaching your children how to behave like humans. A child psychologist who writes in our local newspaper says that more important than teaching your child to read before he starts school is to teach manners. I pity the poor school teachers trying to teach a room full of little darlings who are swinging from the chandeliers, and mommy is too afraid to damage their little psychics to correct them. That is why they have trouble learning in school today. When I went to school, we were not allowed to chew gum in class. Today, you have to pass through a metal detector, and we still have violence in our schools. Does anyone have a clue where they are learning all this violence? Is anyone in charge of the children's lives? Do we want the government to take over that responsibility? Are televisions and movies our children's nannies? Step up to the plate, moms and dads. This is your turn at bat. You can never go back and change the stats years from now. Save yourself years of grief. Do it right while you have the chance. Then when you are old and gray, you can look back and be proud of what you've accomplished. Your children will thank you. Mine do every time they talk to me. I am as thrilled as Michael that you have started this project. I started it over 50 years in my own family. When Michael was born, my husband and I agreed we wanted to teach our son everything we knew about the world. We took him to museums prenatally because I loved going to them as I was a small child. You can drop him off at a museum today and come back 2 weeks later and he won't even be aware you were gone. When Michael was 2 years old, we took him to the train in Chicago during the Christmas season. We live a half hour away from the city. Marshall Fields is a very large department store that always has their windows beautifully decorated with Christmas scenes. They have Santa there for the children, but we learned to just pay attention to what our sons were fascinated with in the toy department and knew what they would enjoy finding under the Christmas tree. One day, our middle son told his father, "Do you realize that I'm 6 years old and I have never seen the Statue of Liberty?" We went to New York that summer. They saw everything from the Golden Gate Bridge to the White House to Mount Vernon to Monticello and everything in between. I read to them every evening and instilled in them a lust for learning. It brought our family closer, and we have fond memories of our lives together. My mother read to me daily. And one of my favorite books was a book of presidents with George Washington's picture on the cover. I still have that book. All the previous books were about giants and elves and make-believe. The book was nonfiction, and I instantly felt like a grown-up with real data instead of fairy tales. To this day, I prefer nonfiction books. A supermarket years ago had 4-inch-high plastic statues of the presidents, which you could buy every 2 weeks. I've never been able to discard them, so they are still in our family archives. Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think one of my sons would run for president. How much of what we did raising him had a lasting effect on him, one never knows. The older I get, the more I realize and appreciate all my family did teaching me about this wonderful world we live in. It has made my life much easier and very noticeably richer emotionally. If I can do anything to pass on those lessons to yet another generation, I would be thrilled and delighted. Sincerely, Elaine Badnarik.
Wow, that's a mom.
That is a mom.
And, you know, my mom is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, hi, Mom.
Mm-hmm.
If you're listening.
You think they get the podcast there in heaven, Dot?
I think they have anything they want.
Then I'll say hi to my mom, too.
No doubt.
And our grandmas.
Yeah. What a cool thing for Elaine to do.
Mm-hmm. I was really appreciative of that, and I hate that she's gone as well, but she left her mark.
You bet.
Right. Now, speaking of our moms, a long time ago when I had taught an aquatic therapy class, my mom was in the class, and there was a group of women that came regularly, and Mom always added her part to anything. So we'd have our class, and it was fun because we got to know the women in the class in a way that you would never think just getting together in the water and exercising would do, but we had fun.
So you made exercise fun, and I'm thinking that your mother, being part of the Singing Seas, had something to do with that.
She was a part in the Singing Seas back in her high school days. And I don't know, maybe that's where, you know, the idea of a theme song for everything you do. I don't know if Mom felt that was a necessary thing. But she said, how about we end each class with a song that she sang back when she was growing up. And it was called Give Yourself a Pat on the Back. Well, I couldn't remember the song. A couple years ago, I thought, man, I wish I could remember that song because Mom's been gone 11 years and it's been much longer since I had that class. But I knew it was just kind of a nice way to close out the day or end a gathering, and I could not remember how the words went. And I Googled everything under the sun trying to come up with it. Finally, I put enough words together out of my memory to come up with the song. I found the words. And then I thought last night, I knew we were going to do this program, and I thought, I wonder if there's, but I was a little unsure of the tune because it's been a long time since I sang it. I had the words in front of me.
Hit it, Jan.
That's right. So I thought, I'll just check on YouTube and I'll put Give Yourself a Pat on the Back. And sure enough, I found it. Give Yourself a Pat on the Back was a Leslie Cerrone novelty song recorded, and we're going to actually play this recording, by Florrie Forty in 1929, as well as other artists throughout that time, such as Tommy Handling. Mm-hmm. It was Florrie's successful attempt to keep up with the change in British taste from the old music hall traditions to a new radio variety type of performances, which she handled equally well and strides both eras rather nicely despite her increasing age at the time. Many other old music hall artists carried on with their old acts to ever-diminishing audiences, but Florrie adapted. She was 54 years old by this point in 1929, and like they said, you can't keep a good artist or a good woman down. The words of Give Yourself a Pat on the Back, that I knew them, and you'll find the song has a few more.
No doubt.
Mom taught us this. Give yourself a pat on the back, a pat on the back, a pat on the back, and say to yourself you're in jolly good health. You've had a good day today. Yesterday was full of trouble and sorrow. Nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow. So give yourself a pat on the back, pat on the back, pat on the back, and say to yourself you're in jolly good health. You've had a good day today. And then give your neighbor a pat on the back, a pat on the back, a pat on the back, and say to your neighbor you're in jolly good health. We've had a good day today.
Shall we have her sing it?
We should. Okay. Let's close out with
Give Yourself a Pat on the Back
by Florrie Forty.
Y'all take care now.
Happy Mother's Day.
Bye-bye.
On the back, pat on the back, pat on the back, and say to yourself, "Here's jolly good health. I've had a good day today. Yesterday was full of trouble."